Hi there. I'm Melissa Bowman for CKMS News on 102.7 FM Radio Waterloo. Thanks for tuning in to today's Waterloo Region Weekly Roundup. Today's episode focuses on Waterloo Regional Council budget discussions. We'll look at the proposed police budget and continued calls to reallocate funds from the police budget to more upstream services such as housing, transit, and consumption and treatment services. In order to see how we ended up where we currently are with a proposed police budget of approximately $185 million, I'll first share a little bit about the police board and some of their recent meetings and discussions. The police board consists of 7 members, 3 from Regional Council, Karen Redman, Carl Kiefer, and Sandy Shantz. The other 4 members are Karen Schnarr, Ian McLean, Tony Giovinazzo, and Rosita Say. In 2020, the $181 million police budget resulted in the average household in the region paying $659. The original proposed 2021 budget was an increase of approximately $8 million, totaling $189 million. That would result in the average household paying $681 per year for policing services. Also, noted by Jeff Outhit in the Waterloo Region Record, in the last 3 years, police spending has increased by nearly 16% in Waterloo Region. The police board met on November 18th, and this was the first police board meeting they live streamed, which is kind of exciting as it allows interested residents to watch these meetings without having to be a registered delegation. At that meeting, resident Sam Nabby spoke as a delegation in support of Reallocate Waterloo Region. He said that residents aren't looking for perfection, but they are wanting action.
We don't expect the police to do everything or to be perfect, but we do expect the officers serving our region to earn the trust of the communities they claim to protect, to behave beyond reproach, and to take ownership of past failings. We don't expect our elected officials to be perfect either, but when the region's largest ever mass protest demands fundamental changes to policing, we expect some follow-up. We expect the members of this board, especially those who also sit on Regional Council, to have had proactive conversations with Chief Larkin about reallocating funding to prioritize community safety. Where is the leadership from this board and from Regional Council to guide the budget process? Why did police administration feel that it was appropriate to ask for an $8 million increase in the midst of a municipal budget crunch?
Mr. Nabby discussed the importance of addressing root causes of crime and asks the board to ensure investments are made into Indigenous and Black-led community initiatives and upstream services.
Everyone here at this meeting knows that the root causes of crime and violence go far beyond the scope of policing itself. It's time to rebalance this financial equation and properly fund upstream services. Reinvestment in defunded and underfunded communities, social and healthcare services led by and for Black, Indigenous, and racialized communities will be a vital contributor to our community's ability to center our voices and co-create our futures.
The meeting then moved into a presentation from Police Chief Brian Larkin, and he introduced the Community Safety and Wellbeing Approach.
The Community Safety and Wellbeing Division is the largest change around our operational deployment. It's a new division, and it's focused on community well-being. This is really focused on the next 3 years of how do we transition as a police service from dealing with those that may not necessarily require policing services, but at 4 in the morning, we're the only agency that's available. So how do we downstream, upstream, how do we divert, how do we actually look at different opportunities?
We continue to hear more about this plan in upcoming meetings, but at November's police board meeting, Larkin said that he hopes this approach, which focuses on the social determinants of health, will help solve and prevent crimes by working with various neighborhood partners. Larkin sees this plan as relying less on the judicial system and instead offering a caring and compassionate approach.
As I said, we end up dealing with individuals who are vulnerable, maybe marginalized, maybe at a difficult point in their life, where the judicial system is not the answer. In fact, a caring, compassionate community approach is the answer.
Larkin went on to say, "We can do business differently than simply processing everything through the justice system." This idea of doing business differently is a theme that we see run through several presentations from the police services regarding the budget, along with more details about the community well-being and safety plan. At the October meeting, the Waterloo Regional Police Services had been asked to revisit the proposed budget and return with other options that resulted in lower increases. So at November's meeting, Larkin presented 6 different options. These options offered various budget increases ranging from 1.4 to 4.4%. The police board seemed impressed with these 6 options and asked the police services to more fully develop options 3 and 4, which have increases of 2.9% and 3.4% respectively. As noted in the Waterloo Region Record, Police Board member Karen Schnarr said she was very pleased with what police were bringing forward after going back and forth multiple times with the board. She said, "This budget allows us to keep the lights on with what we are currently doing." December's Police Board meeting began with comments from Mark Eggers, representing the Waterloo Region Police Association. He spoke to concerns he has around calls to defund the police.
"The media have been consumed for the past months with running stories and opinion pieces about how we might be able to defund the police. It's often without proper data, and it's unjust. The concept or calls to cut police budgets are not new. It's important to recognize that the term defunding the police has become a bit of a catchphrase without clear or consistent definition. The most concerning element surrounding the notion of defunding the police is that its proponents claim, and I stress without evidence, that funding cuts or shifting dollars away from police budgets will not impact public safety. This is an oversimplification and does not accurately reflect the true costs associated with managing public safety."
Mr. Eggers goes on to say that the police budget has already experienced a defunding of sorts.
"Data shows that the WRPS has already been experiencing a slow defunding process between 2014 and 2019. During this 5-year period, the police services section of Waterloo Region's municipal budget has declined from 18% to 17%. Others, such as combined social services, social housing, remained at 30%, health remained at 6%, and services such as transportation grew from 21% to 23%. So it begs the question, why the police budget? If policing is going to be the go-to service for society's social and healthcare problems, in addition to the legislative requirements of the Police Services Act, cuts to policing budgets will not improve the persistent issues of crime and socioeconomic challenges facing our municipality. The 1% cut we've already experienced in the overall budget over the past 5 years has only exacerbated the problems, not fixed them. I respectfully ask the Police Services Board to please carefully consider the fact that any further defunding of our police service budget will have significant impacts and ripple effects on the overall safety of Waterloo Region's communities and on the already strained mental health and wellness of our local sworn and civilian police personnel who dedicate their professional lives to protecting us all."
Amy Smoke also spoke to the police board that morning, saying that although she would prefer not to be there and to once again have to share the harms that policing has caused to Indigenous communities, she noted that trotting out our trauma apparently pushes you further into our perspective.
"I've been speaking at city council and regional council meetings in regards to the racial violence we've experienced in your spaces, as well as the police violence and gendered violence. And for some reason, y'all want examples. So I did provide some for you today. Trotting out our trauma seems to push you, I guess, further into a better perspective. So I did try to provide those here for you today. I think that it's important that you look to the Black, Indigenous, and persons of color community members, leaders, and advocates in these spaces to understand better what we are experiencing at your hands. And historically, the mistrust that has occurred on these lands, on these stolen lands."
She ended her delegation by encouraging the board to spend some time looking at reallocatewr.ca. On that website, you will find this statement: "We demand that the region act on our call for reallocation and reinvestment into community-led, culturally responsive upstreaming initiatives to support the building of communities that thrive for generations to come. The website also states that reinvestment in defunded and underfunded communities, social and healthcare services led by and for Black, Indigenous, and racialized communities will be a vital contributor to our community's ability to center our voices and co-create our futures. At the end of December's Police Board meeting, the board unanimously voted to approve the proposed 2021 police operating budget, which sets the tax levy at $185.4 million, an increase of 2.9% over last year's amount. That still needs to go to Regional Council for final approval. Delegations such as Ms. Smoke and Mr. Nabi, along with the Reallocate WR site, reference alternative models of community safety as possible examples of how to take action on these issues. One example often cited is CAHOOTS, which is the Crisis Assistance Helping Out on the Streets program in Eugene, Oregon. CAHOOTS has been around for over 30 years, and it is operated by a community health clinic and funded by the police department. CAHOOTS staff are unarmed and trained in crisis intervention and de-escalation, thereby offering support to some of the city's most vulnerable residents in ways the police department cannot. A recent Atlantic Monthly article explored this model in depth. The article explains that police in Eugene were caught in a cycle of arresting the same people over and over for violations such as drinking in public parks and sleeping where they weren't allowed to. CAHOOTS teams work in 12-hour shifts, mostly responding without the police. Each van is staffed by a medic and a crisis worker, typically someone with a background in mental health support or street outreach, who takes the lead in conversation and de-escalation. Of course, there are limits to what CAHOOTS is able or even allowed to do. The Atlantic article states that CAHOOTS teams are not permitted to respond when there's any indication of violence or weapons, or to handle calls involving a crime, a potentially hostile person, a potentially dangerous situation, or an emergency medical problem. CAHOOTS and other models therefore don't replace the police, but offer an alternative service to call upon in certain circumstances, a model that many in our community see value in, as was evident at the January 14th public input session, which I'll share about momentarily. Before we get to that discussion though, the Regional Council Budget Committee met on January 12th to further deliberate on the police budget. Committee Chair Sean Strickland opened that meeting saying, "There has been overwhelming interest in the police budget this year." Police Chief Brian Larkin's presentation outlined the rate of police officers per 100,000 population, which apparently is often referred to as the cop-pop ratio. He states that the WRPS falls below the national average of 148 officers per 100,000 people. Larkin says that the WRPS wants to set the foundation for a better tomorrow and a greater future for all with their plan, A Path Forward, which focuses on equity, inclusion, and diversity.
And we want to set the foundation for a better tomorrow and a greater future for all. Our path forward is a number of different processes pulled together. In March of this year, we launched our first ever strategic plan centered around equity, inclusion, and diversity. It was the focus of 2 years of work by a number of our members who did significant work with an external consultant and met with many different community organizations. But that is only one aspect. It has to be tied to long-term change. And over the next 90 days, we'll be launching a new neighborhood policing. And we'll be certainly presenting more to Regional Council as we do that. But one of the key initiatives, as I allude to, is refocusing on who we are as a police service and who we are as a community. A strong focus on community safety and well-being, tied to crime prevention, tied to upstream prevention. A significant focus on launching a community safety and well-being division, which will bring our community resource offices together. We'll create a specialized impact team and enhance and have a specialized unit that works with mental health clinicians. The addition of mental health calls for service triaging in our 911 call center. And a 3-year plan to look at how we actually off-ramp and how we move towards much more community-led initiatives around community safety, public order issues, And it allows the police service to focus on investigating crime in our community, but also continues to intersect with all of the different agencies. So stay tuned for more on that. It's an exciting initiative that will come out and change the way we do business as an organization with a significant accountability piece. We're committed to making a difference. And in closing, what you see is a proposed operating budget of $185 million and a capital budget of $40 million. We worked extremely hard. I'm very proud of our leadership team, and I'm proud of the work with our police services board to ensure that our budget was aligned with the Finance Committee recommendations. And as we move forward into 2021, our commitment to the board, to regional council, to our partners, to our citizens, is the continued work driving towards excellent. We recognize we're not perfect, but we will always be people-focused, people-driven, and we will be making a change in our community. That's who we are as an organization, 24/7, 365. So as I look forward to your questions, I also look forward to a year that is filled with unity, a year that is filled with leadership, a year that is filled with advancing collectively as a community.
Councillor Tom Galloway, who represents Kitchener, asked Police Chief Larkin several questions about ways the WRPS could really do things differently, citing possible examples such as the Bear Clan Patrol in Calgary.
Chief, you did talk about a three-year plan, I think it was, to provide some kind of off-ramp, as you put it, in terms of being able to divest the police service from doing certain functions. We often talk about mental health calls, and you did address that, and there are some advances coming in that regard, but it's still police-led. And I'm wondering what we have to do to get from point A to point B, from where we are today in the police doing just about everything, because that's what they've been called upon to do, to a system where we build capacity in the community to do certain functions that the police have historically been doing, because quite frankly, there's nobody else at 3 o'clock in the morning to do it. And I look to what Calgary is doing. The city council has earmarked $8 million of city money, not police budget so much, to look at alternate delivery models for the city of Calgary. And so there's been a lot of discussion about this in our community that people are anxious to have that conversation, to look at other kinds of ways that certain kinds of services can be delivered without having to use expensive resources of the police service. And sometimes, the uniformed military type response is not the most appropriate. And there have been models that have been put forward and in implementation. But the frustration that I feel is, how do we get from where we are today, where the police by default, in some cases, do everything, to a more preferred future where we could have a more community-based community safety plans and building capacity in our community.
So one of the creation of the Community Safety and Wellbeing Division is really a large part of when we've been re-engineering and working with the Police Services Board. Our leadership team came together and actually examined all of the dialogue and discussions, Councillor Galloway, that you're having. And we do believe that there's a better model and a better outcome. That being said, there's also always going to be an element of certain calls for service where based on, risk assessment and threat assessment that police services will attend.
Chief Larkin references their police services partnership with IMPACT and CMHA and again highlights the fact the police do have to respond to many mental health calls as they are really the only option available at certain times. As one possible way of getting closer to that goal, Councillor Galloway suggests a potential 0% increase to the police budget this year. Larkin responds.
To get to a 0% increase would require us to move and look towards another savings of about $2.9 million. Prior to coming into the budget, we found $4.6 million in efficiencies and savings and reductions. So to move towards a 0% budget would actually create 40 frontline vacancies in an organization that, although we do things very well and we're efficient, would actually create some significant challenges. And I do believe that I would not be able to fulfill my mandate under the Police Services Act to provide effective services.
That was all of the scheduled meetings around the police budget. However, community members noted that the regional budget process historically holds two public input sessions, whereas this year it only had one, and that because the police budget presentation was delayed into January, when it is usually held in December, it did not allow for public input related to the WRPS budget presentation. Council responded and scheduled a second public input session for January 14th. 11 delegations spoke at that meeting, and many more people submitted written correspondence. All of the in-person delegations and the written correspondence spoke in support of the Reallocate WR's calls to action, including a 0% police budget increase and reallocating those funds to Black and Indigenous-led social services and supports. Delegations, and those with written responses, focused on a few key areas, including the harm done to Indigenous, Black, and racialized people, the need to better fund crime prevention and upstream services, and how too often we defund many other needed community services, such as childcare. Lori Campbell reminds Council that racialized and Indigenous people are most impacted by so-called improvements to policing.
Black, Indigenous, racialized, and poor white folk who participate in these community safety models indicate their participation is underpinned by a commitment to their own community and a desire to enhance crime prevention and community safety. This work is seen as an extension of our commitment to our communities. We know what we need best, and I ask you to reimagine the public safety response continuum by investing in a community-based response.
Ms. Campbell concludes, if the ultimate goal is community safety, then now is the time for police to step back and reinvest in other community-led initiatives. Another delegation, Daniel Thompson Bloom, says that for some folks in our community, the police will never be safe for them, and supports Reallocate WR's calls for a 0% budget increase, with that funding going to support life-giving services.
And the fact is that we're seeing enormous amounts of tax dollars poured into solutions that aren't really working and that harm people. There is no trust between certain communities and police. Being a trans person, I can speak to my experience in that people just simply won't call or simply won't report any discrimination that's happening to them because they will be re-traumatized by the process of reporting it to police, who typically don't believe that they've experienced discrimination or hate, or do believe it, but simply say that there's nothing they can do. Resources have to be diverted into vital and life-giving resources, like housing and harm reduction initiatives. And this is why I also fully support the calls to action by Reallocate Waterloo Region. I believe that the only way to improve realities for Black, Indigenous, and racialized populations, including those who are also transgender or queer, is to allow those people to take the forefront.
Carolyn Ferguson states that the police budget dominates the regional budget and wonders how council can close its 5 childcare centers and then support an increase of millions of dollars for the police budget.
I echo the concerns of my fellow community members that increasing funding to police services, which already dominates the regional budget, means that community-based upstream services will continue to be underfunded and in some cases will be defunded. In the current regional budget that will be approved next week, we are looking at increasing funding to the Waterloo Region Police Service budget by millions of dollars, while Regional Council at the same time has chosen to shut down our 5 regionally operated child care centers, which cost a fraction of the Waterloo Region Police Service budget. This is a clear example of one community service being defunded in order to increase funding to a downstream service.
Ms. Ferguson concludes, please support what your community is telling you it needs, increased funding in community services. In addition to the 11 delegations, there were more than 40 pages of written correspondence to Council about the police budget, and at the time of this airing, all of it was in support of the Reallocate WR calls to action. Karen Myers wrote that Reallocate WR is asking for reallocation of public tax dollars into systems that prevent crime prior to its occurrence. It is no secret that public support systems remove the impulse towards crime. This is not an alarming request. It is not radical or irregular. I cannot stress this enough. Defunding police is not about taking something away. It is about giving and growing. The opportunity here is to be a better, cleaner, healthier community. By funding upstream public services, we will reduce crime before it occurs. And that concludes Mr. Meyer's submission. And another resident, Jennifer Laurie, stated that we have said that there is not enough money for social workers or housing or food security programs or community centers or opportunities for seniors or snow removal. The list of what we haven't considered a high enough priority for community well-being is long and touches almost everyone in our community. But there has always been enough money for police. This region prides itself on innovation and doing things differently, on leading and barn raising. It is possible to be leaders in more than tech, more than higher education. Let's be leaders in social justice. That ends Ms. Laurie's written response. Councillor Strickland concludes the meeting by reminding residents of several regional initiatives, such as the creation of the Anti-Racism Working Group, funding for additional anti-racism work, and funds dedicated to housing. He says this to show that, quote, we are listening and adapting. We are taking all of this into consideration. That brings us to Budget Day for Regional Council, which is on January 20th, where the 2021 regional budget should be finalized. Thanks for listening, and as always, we can continue this conversation online, and you can find me at M2Bowman on Twitter. Also follow at Radio Waterloo on Twitter for CKMS programming updates and information. This program is a part of the Local Journalism Initiative grant program and is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the Government of Canada, and the CKMS Newsroom.